16. Yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 4, Text 16, and quite a few continuing verses after this also. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON. Idam aha harihi pritaha gajendram kurusattama shrinvatam sarvabhutanam sarvabhutamayaha vibhuhu idam aha hari prito gajendram kurusattama shrinvatam sarvabhutanam sarvabhutamayo vibhuhu idam aha hari prito gajendram kurusattama shrinvatam sarvabhutanam sarvabhutamayo vibhuhu. Said, Harihi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Pritaha, being pleased, Gajendram, unto Gajendra, Kurusattama, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Shrinvatam, hearing, Sarvabhutanam, in the presence of everyone, Sarvabhutamayaha, all-pervading personality of Godhead, Vibhuhu, the great, O best of the Kuru dynasty, the supreme personality of Godhead, the supersoul of everyone, being thus pleased, addressed Gajendra in the presence of everyone there. He spoke the following blessings. So there are quite a few verses without purports. According to the etiquette, we won't comment on them. I'll just read the following verses. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, freed from all sinful reactions are those who rise from bed at the end of night, early in the morning, and fully concentrate their minds with great attention upon my form, your form, this lake, this mountain, the caves, the gardens, the cane plants, the bamboo plants, the celestial trees, the residential quarters of me, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the three peaks of Trikuta mountain made of gold, silver and iron, my very pleasing abode, the ocean of milk, the white island, Shvetadvip, which is always brilliant with spiritual rays, my mark of Srivatsa, the Kaustubha gem, my Vaijayanti garland, my club, Komodaki, my Sudarshan disc and Panchajanya conchal, my bearer, Garuda, the king of the birds, my bed, Shesha Naga, my expansion of energy, the goddess of fortune, Lord Brahma, Narad Muni, Lord Shiva, Prahalad, my incarnations like Matsya, Kurama and Varaha, my unlimited all-auspicious activities, which yield piety to he who hears them, the sun, the moon, fire, the mantra Omkar, the absolute truth, the total material energy, the cows and brahmanas, devotional service, the wives of Soma and Kashyapa, who are all daughters of King Daksha, the rivers Ganges, Sarasvati, Nanda and Yamuna, Kalindi, the elephant Airavata, Dhruva Maharaj, the seven rishis, and the pious human beings. My dear devotee, unto those who rise from bed at the end of night and offer me the prayers offered by you, I give an eternal residence in the spiritual world at the end of their lives. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, after giving this instruction, the Lord, who is known as Hrishikesh, bugled with his Panchajanya conchal in this way, pleasing all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma. Then he mounted the back of his carrier, Garuda. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 4th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled, Gajendra Returns to the Spiritual World. chapter 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 8, the demigods appeal to the Lord for protection. This chapter describes the fifth and sixth manus, and it also describes the prayers of the demigods and the curse of Durvasa Muni. The brother of Tamasa, the fourth manu, who has previously been described, was the fifth manu, Raivat. The sons of Raivat included Arjuna, Bali, and Vindhya. During the reign of this manu, Indra, the king of heaven, was known as Vibhu. Among the demigods were the Bhutaryas, and among the seven rishis were Hiranyaroma, Vedashira, and Urdhva Bahu. The rishi known as Shubhra, by his wife Vikunta, gave birth to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikunta. This Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested a Vaikunta planet at the request of Rama Devi. His power and activities are mentioned in the third canto. The sixth manu was Chakshush, the son of Chakshu Manu. Among the sons of the sixth manu were Puru, Purusha, and Sudyumna. During the reign of this manu, Mantradruma was Indra, the king of the heavenly planets. Among the demigods were the Apyas, and among the seven rishis were Havishman and Viraka. The wife of Vairaj, whose name was Devasambhuti, gave birth to Ajit, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Ajit, taking the shape of a tortoise and holding the mountain known as Mandara on his back, churned the ocean and produced nectar for the demigods. Maharaj Parikshit was very eager to hear about the churning of the ocean, and therefore Shukadev Goswami began to explain to him how the demigods, having been cursed by Durvasa Muni, were defeated in battle by the Asuras. When the demigods were deprived of their heavenly kingdom, they went to the assembly house of Lord Brahma and informed Lord Brahma of what had happened. Then Brahma, along with all the demigods, went to the shore of the ocean of milk and offered prayers to Kshirodakshai Vishnu. Text 1. Shukadev Goswami continued, O King, I have described to you the pastime of Gajendra Mokshan, which is most pious to hear. By hearing of such activities of the Lord, one can be freed from all sinful reactions. Now please listen as I describe Raivata Manu. The brother of Tamasa Manu was the fifth Manu, named Raivata. His sons were headed by Arjuna, Bali, and Vindhya. O King, in the millennium of Raivat Manu, the king of heaven was known as Vibhu. Among the demigods were the Bhutarayas, and among the seven Brahmanas who occupied the seven planets were Hiranyaroma, Vedashira, and Urdhva Bahu. From the combination of Shubhra and his wife Vikunta, there appeared the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikunta, along with demigods who were his personal plenary expansions. Just to please the Goddess of Fortune, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikunta, at her request, created another Vaikunta planet, which is worshipped by everyone. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks here that this Vaikunta planet, like Srimad Bhagavatam, appears and is said to be born or created, but both Srimad Bhagavatam and Vaikunta eternally exist beyond the material universes, which are enveloped by eight kinds of coverings. As described in the second canto, Lord Brahma saw Vaikunta before the creation of the universe. Vira Raghava Acharya mentions that this Vaikunta is within the universe. It is situated above the mountain known as Loka Loka. This planet is worshipped by everyone. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vandeham Shri Guru Shriyata Padakamalam Shri Gurunda Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangscha Shri Krishna Taitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here we all are, sitting in Ljubljana at the end of the year 1998, about to enter into 1999, we have a certain position within time and space in this particular body that we're in. I'm just checking to see, make sure that it's 1998. Still 1998, right? Okay. So we have a particular position, and we tend to consider the universe and everything within it according to this particular situation that we're presently in. We consider that here I am sitting here, I was born so many years ago, and in the past so many things happened. So when we hear about the creation of a Vaikuntha planet, we try to put it within some historical time reference. But actually the Vaikuntha planet is eternal, as we are eternal. We don't, although we superficially we may appear to be a person who was born maybe 22 years ago or 42 years ago, we are eternal people. And although this Ljubljana city may appear to be, how old, a few hundred years old? Anyone know? How old is this historic city of Ljubljana? More than 850 years old. So it has a beginning and an end. That is the nature of the material world. It has a beginning, and even though it seems very old according to our, because we've only lived here for 20 years or 40 years or whatever, it seems very old. In some point of time there'll be no Ljubljana. Sorry to say, but it's just a fact of this material world. There are many cities which were previously existing which no longer exist. There's one whole city in India which was built by a king for his pleasure, Muslim king, and it was hardly, as you can go and see, it's a whole big city, but it was only used for about 20 years and then they abandoned it. Abandoned city. So everything in this material world has a beginning and an end, but that which is eternal has neither beginning nor end. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. In Gita, Krishna says that that which is eternal, it doesn't come into being, nor does it cease to exist. Whereas that which is material, that certainly has a beginning and an end. So the Vaikuntha planet, here it said that the Supreme Lord manifested a Vaikuntha planet for the pleasure of Ramadevi, his wife. But it's not that he created it. Just like in the Christian tradition, they have idea that God created us as human beings, and we will eternally continue to exist after this, either in heaven or hell. But that we didn't exist. When you were born, you fell out of your mother's womb in Ljubljana 25 years ago, whatever. Then you existed, you started to exist. But previous to that, you didn't exist at all. But that's not a fact. You are eternal. Just that you weren't manifest in that particular form. So in the same way, the Vaikuntha planet is eternal, but sometime it becomes manifest in this material world, and sometimes not. Just like the Supreme Lord Krishna, sometimes he's manifest in this world, sometimes not. Actually, he's always present in this world in his different forms, but certain forms are manifest at a certain time and others are not. The form of Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, Dvibhuj Muralidha, two-handed, holding a flute, Shamasunda, blackish and very beautiful. That was manifest in this world 5,000 years ago, in that particular form which stood before Arjuna and spoke Bhagavad Gita. So that form is still manifested in this world in the deity form, which is eternal. The deity is eternal. How is that? Because he is Krishna. Now it may appear that the deity is not eternal. Sometimes there's a ceremony called Visarjan, in which deity, if the deity becomes damaged or very old and his features cannot be seen, or if he's mistreated by demons, then there's a ceremony in which the deity is taken to the river or the ocean, and with ceremony is dropped in the ocean, and then another deity may be installed to take his place. So it may appear that the deity is material, but he's not, because he is Krishna manifesting in that particular form. So certain forms, they may be manifested at a certain time, and others not at another time, but Krishna, he is eternal. Similarly, the Vaikuntha planet is eternal. Similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam is eternal. Now, we hear that Srimad Bhagavatam was first spoken in four verses by Lord Krishna to Brahma, and later there is development. So, just like we hear history, something begins, it develops. So here we are sitting in Ljubljana, and we're thinking that everything is like that. It begins, it develops, it again decays. But the Srimad Bhagavatam, although spoken originally in four verses and then apparently developed, Srimad Bhagavatam is eternal because it's the subject of Krishna. It's not, the subject of Krishna is not different from Krishna. It appears that there's some development, that Bhagavatam was spoken and then different histories of the universe were incorporated. Now, how can it be eternal? You see here we're discussing the dynasties of the different Manus and who. So they would have to be, it would seem that they would have to take their position as a Manu before it could be recorded. That's not necessarily true, because the Srimad Bhagavatam not only gives history, but it also speaks of future history, if there's such a thing. Just like we see that here in the Bhagavatam, although it's written 5,000 years ago, it predicts the appearance of Lord Buddha. Anjana Sutta, it describes. He'll appear as the son of Anjana. Kikateshu bhavishyati. He will appear in the province known as Kikata, which is presently known as Bihar in India. And also the future is described that there will be an avatar in Kali Yuga who is Krishnavanam Tusha Krishnam. He is of the nature of Krishna, but his bodily luster is not blackish. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's also predicted the so many things, the how Kali Yuga is going on, and how there'll be so much political diplomacy and assassinations and so many things. And it's described that at the end of Kali Yuga, the Supreme Lord will appear as the Kalki avatar, as the son of Vishnu Yasha in Sambalpa. Prabhupada identified that place as Sambalpa. That's presently in, there's a city of that name in Orissa, in eastern India. So the future is also given. In other words, these things are known. So it may be written at a certain, it may be written or recorded at a certain time, but it's eternal. It's eternal knowledge. The essence of Bhagavatam is what? To know about Krishna. So that knowledge is eternal. Krishna's pastimes are eternal. Krishna appears in this world and he performs pastimes which appear to be historical. That means that the killing of Putana comes before the killing of Kamsa. But actually all these pastimes are eternal. They're going on eternally, either in one universe or another universe. Therefore they're said to be eternal. So in the same way, Bhagavatam is eternal. Even though it appears, it develops. The different pastimes are enacted, they're recorded, and then Vyasadeva, he put that all together, taught that to his disciples. Shukadev Goswami also heard. Then again Shukadev Goswami spoke. Here you find in Bhagavatam, it's written by Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva is writing how Vyas, his son, spoke the Bhagavatam after he had spoken it to Shukadeva. So actually, Vyas spoke to Shukadeva. Shukadeva spoke to Parikshit Maharaj. Then Suta Goswami spoke to the rishis at Naimisharan. Then Vyasadeva wrote it down. Then after that, even, it's not that that was the end of Bhagavatam, because there are so many commentaries by the Acharyas also. The commentaries by the Acharyas, they're also Bhagavatam. That's, when we read here the purports by Srila Prabhupada, it's not that they're less than the text of the Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam means that which is spoken about Krishna and his devotees by Bhagavatas, those who are great devotees. So their commentary that illuminates the Bhagavatam, that describes to us what is in Bhagavatam. Without the commentary, it's not very easy to understand Bhagavatam. Even the language itself, the Sanskrit, you might understand it this way or another way. There's that verse, interesting verse in Bhagavatam. Dvaparado adhitavan dvapara idang Bhagavatam nama purana brahma sammitam adhitavan dvaparado pito dvaipayanayaham, in which Shukdev Goswami explains to Parikshit Maharaj that this Srimad Bhagavatam is known as Bhagavat Purana. It is the essence of all the Puranas. It was taught to me by my father, Dwaparado. Dwaparado means the beginning of Dwarpa Yuga. So how is that possible? Because Vyasadeva comes at the end of every Dwarpa Yuga. At the end of every Dwarpa Yuga, there's a Vyas who comes and divides the Vedas. That's the meaning of the name Vyas. It means who divides. Divides them, splits them up, classifies them, and writes them down. And then he writes the Puranas, which make the teachings of the Vedas complete. So he comes at the end of Dwarpa Yuga. There's no need of him to come at the beginning of Dwarpa Yuga, because up to that time, people don't need any written record of the Vedas. They have enough intelligence to remember by hearing. Still, sometimes you see in some Gurukuls in India, they have the system of teaching Vedic mantras to young boys simply by chanting. And the boys repeat and they learn like that. So that was the system. So how is it that Dwarparado, this was spoken to Shukadev Goswami at the beginning of Dwarpa Yuga? So it appears to be some contradiction. Jiva Goswami explains that here the word ado in the beginning must mean just like when you see a tree, you see the root first and then you look up. So that which appears to be the end, it's seen at the beginning. So similarly, from our vantage point of view in Kali Yuga, if we consider Dwarpa Yuga, then the closest part to us is the end. So in this way it's to be understood. So there are so many points that without the commentaries of the acharyas, we can't understand. We have to understand through the commentaries of the acharyas. Otherwise, we'll see through the commentaries of the wrong acharyas, Mayavadi acharyas. Just like we have in the four verses of the Bhagavatam, seed verses, Chatushloki Bhagavat, we have ahameva sameva agre nanyat sat sadasach param, in which the Supreme Lord says that I was existing before the manifestation of the material world. So Mayavadis, with their usual grammatical alacrity, have explained this verse, aham eva sameva agre. Aham means, and Krishna says aham, I, but they explain it to mean some, aham means I, is a personal part of speech. But they explain it to mean somehow or other, Mayavadi is always attached to the word aham, some impersonal meaning. It's very strange how they do this, but they do. And all their explanations sit around this. Because the Shastra says, aham brahmasmi, I am spiritual. So they take this to mean that I'm spiritual. You also say aham brahmasmi, you're also spiritual. And you also say aham brahmasmi, you're also spiritual. So we're all one. Very good logic. I'm a man, you're a man, you're also a man, so we're all the same. We're all exactly the same in every respect. Is it very good logic? Because I like to eat apple pie, you should also like to eat apple pie. I'm hungry, you should also be hungry. This is foolish, no logic. But they explain like that. So the Vaishnava Acharyas also explain and give the proper explanation of Bhagavatam and expand on that. There are so many points of Bhagavatam without the commentaries of the acharyas, who are self-realized souls, you won't fully understand. Vyasadeva was explaining. Sukadeva listened. And then what happened? When he explained, it became more sweet. Because it appears that Sukadeva Goswami, he is more ecstatically situated even than his father Vyasadeva. So the Bhagavatam became even more sweet by his pecking like a parrot at the sweet fruit of the Bhagavatam. Nigamakalpatara galitang phalang shukamakad amrita dravasangyatam. This is the Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. It's become sweeter by Sukadeva Goswami's understanding. But what exact how Sukadeva is expressing, there may be so many things. You see, Bhagavatam is only 18,000 verses after all. I mean, it may seem to be quite big. But if we're talking about the Bhagavatam, it means it's describing the Supreme Lord. Then Supreme Lord is unlimited. You can't describe him in 18,000 verses or 18 million or 18 billion trillion verses. So what Sukadeva Goswami says, how much realization is there? How much can be explained? Sukadeva Goswami is saying, but the acharyas, they will explain more. What exactly is Sukadeva's intention? What is being described here? There, we have verses in the... There's one verse in the Gopi Gita, the songs of the Gopis, in which Sukadeva Goswami explains Krishna, how he's going out to the pasturing grounds, taking the cows, decorated with peacock feather. So it appears that this is simply Sukadeva giving description, but the acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti, has explained that actually, this Sukadeva is describing, but this is the gopi's vision of Krishna. So how are we to know unless Vishwanath Chakravarti explains? In the same way, there, every verse of Bhagavatam is unlimited and eternal, being non-different from Krishna. There is one verse in Bhagavatam which apparently not one of the major verses or very important verses. In the out of Vrindavan, Krishna's his pastimes already long in the 82nd chapter of 10th canto. Krishna's already a long time out of Vrindavan, in which the gopis meet Krishna at Kurukshetra and they speak to him in a very formal way. And it appears to be a very formal kind of verse. But this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he meditated on the import of this verse. And his whole life for so many years in Puri was simply relishing the mellows of this verse. So who could understand that? Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was relishing. Surup Damodar Goswami, his secretary, he could understand. No one else understood. Only when Rupa Goswami came to Puri, then he could also understand what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's meditation. Why? What is this, him staying up all night and scratching on the walls and feeling separation. What is this? So Rupa Goswami, he could understand. So that which was never described before, that was there in the Bhagavatam, it was there for everyone to read. Different acharyas explained. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he brought out the significance of this verse in a way which only he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Radharani himself, only he could do that. So in other acharyas, they have so many realizations of Bhagavatam, but they couldn't come to that realization. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has to do. So there are so many realizations. Every verse of Bhagavatam, every word, every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is so much depth, so much understanding. Different acharyas, because all the acharyas, they're all pure devotees of Krishna. They all have their realizations of Krishna. And Krishna is unlimited, and he fully reciprocates with every pure devotee, fully. So every devotee has their realization of Krishna. So any pure devotee who comments on Bhagavatam, then he'll give so many realizations. You'll find even after so many years, Bhagavatam has been there, still the acharyas new different acharyas are manifesting in this world and giving different realizations which no one had before. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he explained so many things which had never been explained before. In the Mahabharata, there's the story of Yudhishthira Maharaj. He didn't want to tell a lie. Krishna said, now you must tell a lie. You must say, how are we going to kill Dronacharya? Dronacharya, already Yudhishthira, before the battle, he very politely went to the leaders of the other forces, just when all the armies were, the two armies were there on the battlefield, facing each other. So Yudhishthira, for whose sake the battle was being fought, rode out alone towards the other army. So everyone was wondering, what is this? Is he coming to surrender, or is he trying to sue for peace on the battlefield? Now he went to all the leaders and said, he went to Bhishma, Drona, Ashwatthama. He went to each of them individually. First of all, asked their blessings to fight against them. And then asked them, how can you be killed? What would we have to do to kill you? So they all said different things. Dronacharya said, I cannot be killed unless my son is killed. Only out of disappointment if he's been killed. So then he went to Ashwatthama and asked, how can you be killed? He said, I can't. I'm going to be alive at the end of this battle. You can't kill me. So Dronacharya, he was causing havoc in the Pandava forces, killing them right, left, and center. So Krishna thought, we have to get rid of this Dronacharya. How to get rid of him? So we have to say, we can't kill Ashwatthama. He's already said that. That's a fact. He can't be. He's not to be killed. That's not in his fate to be killed here. So we have to lie and tell that he's killed. Then Dronacharya will lose enthusiasm. Then we can kill him. So how to do that? Who's going to say? Well, if I say, Krishna said, no one will. They won't believe me. They know I'm tricky. Can't trust him. So Bhima, no way. You can't. You're not going to believe Bhima. Yudhishthira, you have to say, because everyone knows you won't tell a lie. Then Yudhishthira said, well, you know, how can I tell a lie? I never told a lie in all my life. Well, that's why we want you to say it, because then they'll believe you, because everyone knows you don't tell lies. You have to do it. So then they made some arrangement. There was some elephant on the Pandava forces called Ashwatthama. So they killed him, and Yudhishthira Maharaj called out, Ashwatthama is dead. Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. So Ashwatthama, in the meantime, Krishna blew his conch, and so it was only heard, Ashwatthama is dead. So it was true, but it was a lie. It was not the kind of thing that Yudhishthira would normally like to do. But he did it at Krishna's insistence. And then Drona lost his enthusiasm and shortly thereafter was killed. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, being such a pious king, the emblem of morality, his chariot, he had some boon, that his chariot, it went along, but not exactly on the ground, but above the ground, to show his high standard of piety. But then after he did this whole thing, Ashwatthama is dead, came down. So everyone described, see, he told a lie, and his chariot had to come down. But after 5,000 years, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained, that wasn't the reason. The reason is because he hesitated to follow the order of Krishna, and he only followed it on some condition. His piety is that he's a pure devotee of Krishna. So he compromised that, therefore his chariot had to come down, not because he told a lie. If you tell a million lies in the service of Krishna, that's more pious than not telling any lie. On the mundane moral platform. Of course, generally, devotees, they observe moral rules, but higher morality is to do whatever is required for Krishna. So, this way, Bhaktisiddhanta, so many things he explained. In Mahabharata also, there's the story of Ekalavya, who was a forest dweller, who wanted to be expert in archery. So he accepted Drona as his guru. He didn't ask him. He just thought, well, I'll make Drona my guru. So he made a deity of Drona and worshipped him. And by worshipping him and practicing, he took the power from him by which he became expert. So among Drona's pupils, direct pupils, Arjuna was the most expert. So what happened, Arjuna and the Pandavas, they were hunting in the forest with Dronacharya, and there was animals they were shooting, and then I can't remember exactly the story, they saw that one of the dogs who was accompanying them was making some noise. Then who can stop him? Then all of a sudden they found that his whole mouth is closed by arrows. So who did that? Who could do that? Who was so expert to do that? And then this forest dweller came out. He's not a Kshatriya. He's not within the Varnashram system. He's not fit to be a disciple according to the Varnashram system. So he came out, and they were surprised that how is this forest dweller? Forest dwellers, they also have bows and arrows, but they just shoot some pigs and eat them, and some wild pigs. They're not expected to be expert in archery. So how is that possible? And Ekalavya came and offered his obeisances to Dronacharya and said that, I've become expert by your grace. I'm worshipping you like this. And therefore, I've become so expert. So Dronacharya asked that, so what should we do now? Arjuna was surprised. He could see he wasn't the most expert archer in the world. Ekalavya was a better disciple. So Arjuna said that you should give some guru dakshina to your guru. You've taken the knowledge from him. So he asked Dronacharya, you should ask him to give his thumb. And if he gives his thumb, then he can't shoot anymore. So Dronacharya took his thumb. So generally people understood that Arjuna said that because he was envious of Ekalavya. He didn't want to be number two in the world. He wanted to be number one. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, 5,000 years later, explained that that's not the fact. Arjuna is not envious. He's a pure devotee of Krishna. But because Ekalavya had not approached Dronacharya in the proper system as a disciple, he had simply stolen his blessings without approaching him in the proper way and submitting himself as a disciple. So Arjuna wanted to show that it is not the proper way to do it, that you can become knowledgeable or powerful by the grace of a guru, but you have to reciprocate in the proper way. There's a system. So in this way, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave his explanations. So these explanations of Shastra, they are as good as Shastra. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sometimes said that what the Acharya says, that is even more important than Shastra, because Shastra you can't understand by itself. You have to understand through the Shastra. Even if the Acharya says something which is apparently contradictory to Shastra, that should be accepted, as that is actually Shastra, because the great pure devotees, they are directly inspired by Krishna to speak. There are so many things apparently contradictory in Shastra anyway, that if you see it, you might become confused. Acharya explains. He explains how actually there's no contradiction. All these Shastras, they lead towards Krishna. So apparently contradictory statements or statements that don't appear to tally with our understanding, that has to be explained by the Acharyas. And what the Acharyas say, that is to be accepted as good as Shastra, if not better. That's why the Vallabha Acharya, he came in Puri before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I can't accept what Sridhar Swami says. His commentary on Bhagavatam is full of so many faults. So immediately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't even want to discuss with Vallabha Acharya. He said, how can you say? If you don't accept this Swami, then you're a prostitute. There's some play on words. That means a wife, if she doesn't follow her husband, she's considered to be a prostitute. That is in Vedic culture. And here, they don't have any. They don't even mind to be called a prostitute. So same way, Sridhar Swami, if you don't follow the Swami, is pun, play on words. If you don't follow the Swami, then you're simply rejected like a prostitute. So he didn't even discuss with him whether your commentary is, what are the different points, what is the logic behind it. Didn't even want to discuss. You have to follow the Acharya. What he has said is perfect. If you don't understand it's perfect, that is your misfortune. That's not that he is wrong, you are wrong. If you think the Acharya has made a mistake, you made a mistake. You may think, you may explain in a very intelligent way, this way, that way, the other way, that this is wrong, that is wrong. Now we have this this practically atheistic idea going around. Prabhupada made mistakes. What rascal them? Who can say that? Prabhupada, what mistake? He went all over the world and preached Krishna consciousness. And you're going to say he made a mistake? Prabhupada said, my only mistake was I accepted so many rascal disciples. Not fallen, so many. They didn't follow. That could be taken as a mistake because the spiritual master has to suffer for the sinful reactions if the disciple doesn't follow. So he has to take some of that. So Prabhupada said, that was my mistake. He was very liberal in giving initiation. Prabhupada said, I accept so many people who are not qualified as disciples. What to do? Prabhupada wrote, I'm prepared to go to hell for the sake of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya wanted Krishna consciousness spread all over the world. So Prabhupada accepted so many people as disciples. Practically none of them were, if you see Hari Bhakti Vilas, what are the qualifications to be a disciple? Practically no one's qualified according to that. You have to be practically a pure devotee even to become a disciple. So, but then how to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world unless there is acceptance of disciples, commitment to follow, there has to be there. So therefore, according to the Pancharatrik system, the Prabhupada accepted so many disciples. Pancharatrik system means that if someone is prepared to follow at some basic level, then he can become purified. Just like bell metal can be converted into gold by an alchemical process. So, tata diksha vidhanena. Same way, by the diksha vidhi, diksha vidhan, by the process of initiation, someone who is impure can be purified. But then if they don't follow, then you don't become purified. It makes sense, doesn't it? That if you follow the process, you can become purified. But if you don't, you don't become purified. So that's a risk, because so many people, they take their initiation vows very cheaply. All right, I got an issue. Let's try it out, see what it's like. See what it's like to be a Hare Krishna for some time. Okay, all right, that was okay. All right, now let's get back to real life. So people, they may not stick to that. And people in Kali Yuga, mandasu manda matayo manda bhagya hi upudruta, all the bad qualities. The mind is disturbed, they're unlucky, unfortunate, foolish, and so many bad qualities. So even people, they promise, but they don't necessarily follow. So that may, you could say Prabhupada made that mistake. He himself said that's a mistake. That again is not a mistake, that is his great mercy. But we can understand that Acharya, Prabhupada, there may be so many Acharyas, but no one did what Prabhupada did, preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted. Krishna consciousness spread in every town and village. He did it through Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, he was, how did he do that? Because he had firm faith in Guru and Krishna. He had firm faith in Shastra. Therefore he was able to be successful. Whereas others, they weren't even thinking of how to do that. Even though they had all the god brothers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had the same order to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world, but they thought, no, it's not possible. They were disappointed, they gave up. And even Prabhupada wanted to do it, even then others thought it's not possible. They never thought it could be possible. And Prabhupada did it because he had firm faith in the order of Guru and Krishna. So we understand that everything Prabhupada did and said, that is inspired by Krishna. It's not that he was simply just going along in some kind of whimsical way, but Prabhupada was directed by Krishna. Prabhupada wanted to establish this whole Vedic culture. If we think about that, it's a tremendous proposition to establish the Vedic culture in this world. But But Prabhupada wanted to do that because that is what is in Shastra, that describes, that is the way to live as a human being, is to follow the Shastra. And if you don't follow a human being, then how can you be Krishna conscious? I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made animals Krishna conscious, but he's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada made animal-like human beings Krishna conscious. But if we remain at the platform of animals, then how are we going to progress? Therefore, the Vedic culture, all the points of Shastra, Prabhupada wanted to bring in. Many of the things Prabhupada said were not popular, or they weren't easy to accept. Definitely, Prabhupada, he was saying in the Western world that the moon is further away than the sun. Who's going to accept that? But Prabhupada, it's in Shastra, you have to follow. Prabhupada said to the feminist newspaper reporter that all the problems in human society are caused because women are not submissive to men. It wasn't popular. But Prabhupada said it. Why? Because that's according to Shastra. Everyone has their particular role to play. And if you don't follow, then so many problems will ensue. So Prabhupada, he gave exactly according to Shastra. That is the meaning of Guru. Guru means who follows Shastra. Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. He follows Shastra, Guru, Sadhu. He follows Shastra as it is explained by the previous acharyas. So Prabhupada did that in a way which had not been done previously. He brought Shastra into the land of the atheists. Atheist means those who don't have faith in the Vedas. Vedna mania bodhoito nastik. The Buddhists are considered atheists because they don't accept the Vedic literatures. So Prabhupada, he brought this knowledge here. It's impossible from the material point of view. But he did it because he was inspired by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He brought this eternal culture of Krishna consciousness, the eternal teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, the eternal atmosphere of Vaikuntha in a place which is condemned. Western countries, they're very proud of their material advancement, but practically they're condemned. Even Shastra says that if you cross the ocean out of going away from Bharatavarsha, then you become contaminated, because everything is contaminated, and practically it is. Everything is the whole way people act and think, their culture, everything degraded. But Prabhupada came, he didn't become degraded. Just like when he first came to America, there was a Ramakrishna Mission sannyasi who told Prabhupada, now you've come to the Western countries, you have to adjust to the Western way of life. You have to eat meat and drink wine and wear Western clothes. Prabhupada, no. He came in, even in the winter in New York with snow, more than this. He was there in his dhoti. Of course, he had an overcoat also, but he wore his dhoti, shaved head, tilak. He gave what prasad to eat? Chapatis, rice, dal. He introduced this culture. Culture means a whole way of life. The Vedic culture is a whole way of life based on elevation to Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada brought that. No one thought it's possible. Even the Indians don't want to wear dhotis. What to speak of the Americans? But Prabhupada brought that because he gave the taste of Vaikuntha, which everyone thought was impossible to do. So nowadays we have so many strange ideas about Prabhupada. He made mistakes, or you can't really follow everything he said, and that was for the 1970s, so now it's the 1990s and the world's changed so much that we have to change everything Prabhupada said. So these are all hogwash ideas, nonsense ideas. Prabhupada, he came on the order of Lord Chaitanya and gave us the eternal culture, what Manu has given, what Vyasadeva has given. They already know past, present and future. It's not that you have to adjust Vyasadeva's teachings to the 1990s. Now we have a new age guru who tells us to meditate on the light within us, so we have to adjust Krishna consciousness to that. Some kind of crazy idea. But no, the eternal truth is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the process to attain Him is by devotional service, hearing and chanting about Krishna. Life should be dedicated to Krishna. So the acharyas, they have already taken into account all these things and given us Shastra, the previous acharyas. And acharyas come just to keep everything in order. Time to time, great acharyas come to establish what is the correct understanding of Shastra, how people should live according to Shastra, and to drive out all the wrong ideas. So really this Prabhupada, he had so many ambitions for this Krishna conscious movement. Not that he was materially ambitious, but he wanted that this Krishna conscious movement would be spread, as Lord Chaitanya said, to every town and village, that people will take up Krishna consciousness en masse. But that is possible not by any material adjustment. If we think that, well, you know, everyone's having illicit sex, so why don't we adjust it? And then people will accept it more. No. It's simply the whole thing will be spoiled. If you want to make adjustment to material life, that means contamination will enter. Of course, some adjustment is there, just like here, we don't say that. There are so many different things that we may not follow exactly strictly as in India, but the basic points, you can't change. If you change, then the whole thing is spoiled. And if you stick to the principle as given by Prabhupada, who is the representative of Lord Chaitanya, then Krishna conscious movement will manifest, because that is the spiritual energy, just like the Vaikuntha, the personality of Vaikuntha, the Supreme Lord, manifested the Vaikuntha planet. So that is eternally existing by spiritual potency. It's not that he went to architecture school and studied and then he could make Vaikuntha planet. But by his own spiritual potency, he manifested that. So in the same way, it's not by any material means that we can spread Krishna conscious movement all over the world. Material means we have to, as an organization, material means that we have to have rules and regulations, we have to know the laws of the country and act in regard to the laws. There's so many material considerations. But it's not that simply by following these things Krishna consciousness will be spread. Purity is the force. By the faith in Guru and Krishna, Krishna consciousness can be spread. By sticking to the principles of Shastra, that will be spread. Krishna consciousness will manifest. Krishna consciousness is not manifest by any mundane means. So here the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is dispelling, in this purport, he's dispelling the materialistic idea that we might have when we hear that the Vaikuntha planet was apparently created. No. That's your materialistic understanding. You won't understand that way. Hear from the Acharya. Then you'll understand that Vaikuntha, that is eternally manifest, but the personality of Godhead manifested that within this material world, although it wasn't apparently manifest previous to that. So in this way, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is giving us the proper understanding that we have to understand from the Acharyas, the representative of who, of all the previous Acharyas in the modern age, who is Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said that by reading my books, you get in contact with all the Acharyas. You get in contact with the Acharyas. The Acharyas are in contact with Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. Therefore, our whole culture is Bhagavat culture. And that Prabhupada said that we should make the Srimad Bhagavatam our life. That means study Bhagavatam, distribute Bhagavatam, have faith in Bhagavatam, live according to Bhagavatam. And in this way, we should become Bhagavatas, or pure devotees of Krishna. And that's why the Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God. All the incarnations of God come in this world to convert people from being fools and rascals into Bhagavatas. So that is the gift we are getting from Srimad Bhagavatam, the incarnation of the Lord delivered to us by the dearmost devotee of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada. He is giving us Krishna. How is he giving us Krishna? Through Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should take that, follow that. Don't try to misinterpret, malinterpret, or reinterpret. Take it as it is. Hare Krishna. Is there any question, please? A lot of talk about apocalypse. What are the Vedic statements about apocalypse? Well, the Vedic literatures talk about different kinds of destruction. There are different kinds of destruction. There's one at the when Mahavishnu breathes in. That's when all the universe is, that's the real big apocalypse, super apocalypse, in which all the universes are finished. That's at the end of Brahma's life. Then at the end of Brahma's day, there's another destruction up to the up as far as the heavenly planets. Sometimes at the end of Manu's reign, there's also some destruction of the planetary or disturbance of the planetary systems. At the end of every Kali Yuga, also the situation is so much disturbed that there's some kind of, not exactly destruction, but it's the Kalki avatar comes and sets everything right. Then another kind of destruction is the every body that comes into existence. That jatasya hi dhruvang mrityo, everyone has to die. And apart from that, at every second, we are dying. If we're now sitting here, then we're 1 second closer to death than we were 1 second before. So destruction is going on. That is the very nature of the material world. There's always destruction. So there may be apocalypse, this, that. That's there in the material world. Time to time you get big wars, and that goes on. There have been so many big wars in the world, and still the world goes on. Still, you have to chant Hare Krishna. So there may be. Who can say exactly when? Since I was a kid, I've been hearing that the world's going to end in 2 years. It's always 2 years away, or 1 year away, or the date gets put back a bit. So it's just like you read. I was in New York this summer, and I was buying a computer in a shop, so there was some space out or mix up. It happens in New York also. It's not that everything's so super efficient that nothing ever spaces out there. So I had to wait some long time. So in the shop they had a TV. So I was watching, there's going on CNN. It just goes on and on and on about some news, and talking about it as if it's so relishable, how some Swiss Air flight took off in Kennedy Airport and hit the sea off the coast of Canada shortly afterwards, killing everybody on board. So they're talking about it and interviewing the relatives and the Salvation Army workers and this and that. And I had 1 hour of this minor apocalypse of so many people killed. So why do they make such a big fuss? How many people were killed? 250, something like that. But anyway, in America, every day more than 250 people die, either by slipping and breaking their neck, old age, abortion, or they get some disease. So many people are dying, but when they all die all together in one place at one time, it seems like a big disaster. But anyway, they're all going to die. And anyway, so many people are dying. So apocalypse, that means a whole bunch of people all die at once. Anyway, you all have to die. This apocalypse is there anyway. Whether you die quickly or slowly or one by one, you all have to die. So chant Hare Krishna. Yeah, the absolute truth may be seen from different viewpoints. Western? I don't know. I think Western is more eclectic. I would think it's around the other way, that they tend to take every opinion as right. It's not Western or Eastern. It's just permutations and combinations of Mayavad. That's all. What is correct is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's nothing to argue in that. Now, how you see that, Mother Yashoda sees him as her little boy. Radharani sees him as her lover. So how you see that may be different. Maybe a different angle of vision. But the fact is the fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So certain things are facts. They're not arguable about. So there may be so many details which are... Just like we have our different Vaishnava sampradayas, and they all agree that Vishnu is supreme, but there's differences within them also. Some say that, mostly they say Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu, not that Vishnu is an avatar of Krishna. And even the process of surrender, what is the meaning of surrender? There may be so many different discussions on this point, but they all agree that we have to surrender. So Prabhupada, he was very practical. He taught, he didn't get involved in... So generally we find in the history of Indian philosophy, for want of a better word, there are so many abstruse arguments. What is the meaning of tattvamasi? And then you argue for 5 hours on the meaning of the word tat. But Prabhupada, he didn't get involved in these things. Just look, here you are, here's Krishna. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who are you? You're his servant. What are you supposed to do? Serve him. How do you do that? Chant Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada, he didn't get involved in all these mental journeys throughout the universe. Just chant Hare Krishna and do some service, take some prasad and get out of Maya and go back home, back to Godhead. There's, someone was asking me the other day in Moscow about some question about how, well, if you're in Vaikuntha, can you get elevated to Goloka? Why don't you go to Vaikuntha first and find out, get there first and then think about that later. At the moment you're in hell, hellish consciousness. So why don't you become purified first, and then so many abstruse discussions can come later. And then just the same day I read something that one devotee was with Prabhupada on, is in my book actually, I was reading my own book. So one devotee, he was with Prabhupada on a morning walk, and the devotees were asking questions about the gopis' relationships with Krishna and Prabhupada. He was just giving short answers, he wasn't giving very long answers, and he appeared to be not very satisfied. And then this devotee, Swavas, who's now term president in Los Angeles, he came up and he said, Prabhupada, I'm one of the book distributors in Chicago, and we're trying to distribute 100 books for you every day for your pleasure. He just wanted to think that once in my life I have to say something to Prabhupada. So he said this. And Prabhupada looked at him with a big smile and said, this is the disciple. He's simply thinking about how to please the spiritual master. And then he, for the rest of the walk, Prabhupada was talking about this. No more talk about what is our relationship and the gopis and this and that. Prabhupada was praising you. This is what you should discuss. How to serve the spiritual master. That was Prabhupada's mood. Let's do something for Krishna. Instead of sitting around talking this, that and the other. What are we doing for Krishna? You have to spread Krishna consciousness. You have to go out, meet people, give them books, give them prasadam, ask them to chant Hare Krishna, do something for Krishna. Then everything will be revealed. Not that you don't read the books, not that you don't discuss philosophy, but if you think you can understand it simply by discussion on the intellectual platform, it's not possible. You'll become bewildered. Devotees are the highest intellectuals, but they don't operate from the mundane intellectual platform. They take intelligence from Krishna. Any other question? Are some instructions of the acharya given to according to the circumstance? Yes, of course. Just like if Prabhupada tells someone, go and wash your hands, that means for that particular point in time. It doesn't mean that everybody in the whole world should spend their whole life washing their hands. So you have to distinguish between those which are time, place and circumstance instructions, which are to be understood in that way, and those which are inviolable instructions. So that requires some, and that's why also there have to be, now there's some philosophy that, well, you just make Prabhupada your guru, and you just follow him. But then you also require someone to tell you how to follow Prabhupada. Because even there may be different opinions on how to serve Prabhupada. Should we distribute grains to karmis on Ekadashi? Well, Prabhupada said one thing at one time, something on another time. How are you going to sort it out? You just follow Prabhupada. If you're distributing grains on Ekadashi, someone will come and say, you're not following Prabhupada. He said not to do that. And then you bring out another quote. Prabhupada at another time allowed it. So how are you going to solve all these things? Therefore you need Guru to explain all these things. There's Prabhupada many times he wrote letters that appreciating his disciples distributing his books. He said, because you have distributed most books, I will come to your temple next time when I go to America. So if you want Prabhupada to be in your temple, distribute more books. He'll come. Otherwise, you can discuss this way, that way, the other way. Prabhupada this, Prabhupada that. And he's discussing. And someone else is out distributing Prabhupada's books. So who's understanding Prabhupada better? That will be seen by your service. Jai Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai.